the best pace is a suicide pace. And today's a good day to die. And that's how I feel about it too. It's just, yeah. I'm going to go out there and fucking gas myself out first, second, third round and put a high pace on this cat. And you know what, if I take myself out in the process, I don't give a shit. I know that I gave everything I had in there, you know, and that's all I want to do is just, you know, give everything I have, leave a little bit of peace of me in that cage and, you know, hopefully take this dude out early on.
Okay, I'm gonna start it because I am really horrible at doing intros. I haven't quite got that part yet. So
yeah, always the start that's awkward, right?
Right, like I feel like I don't know what to do. Like, cause usually when I see interviews and the people are getting introed, the fighter's just there, like, like what do I do with myself?
That's honestly how I feel about fighting too. Is like it's the start that I'm like, how the fuck do I start this shit off? It's like, it's like so awkward that you guys are like measuring each other out. And I'm like, all right, that's why I like what Cosmo did. He just ran across the cage and just fucking
right. Started. Why not?
Yeah.
Get rid of all that like nerve stuff.
Yeah, might as well. Cause like in the middle of it, like, you know, when you fight, like in the middle of it, you don't really worry, but it's like the start of it sucks. The like all the other processes suck, but it's like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it.
Does it, because you know, like Bruce Buffer announcing, I mean, that's pretty cool, man. Like to have him for the first time just go like say your name, you're just like, yeah.
I don't look him in the eye. I'm like so nervous. All the beginning portions, like the start of the fights, like all that, it's like, oh, I can't deal with it. Like fighting and being like in a brawl or whatever is like whatever, your instinct takes over, it's natural, it's just like not even that scary anymore. But it's like when you're standing across the cage, Bruce Buffer's like saying you're, and like now that's Bruce Buffer too, and I'm like, I'm looking this one, oh god, I do not want to stare at him. Or like one time before a fight, I looked over and Joe Rogan, I caught eyes with Joe Rogan and I was like, oh, I put my head down like we're in the prison yard and I'm like, oh shit. I don't want to start overthinking shit, but yeah, I have my head down. Like at the beginning of announcements or whatever, when they're announcing fights, I always have my head down. I don't want to look at anybody. It's like, I'm not trying to make contact. I just want to fight, you know?
Have you thought about, yeah, for real. Have you thought about like turning around and looking at your corner? Like Amanda Nunes does that. She just turns around.
Maybe I should start doing that. Honestly, that's a good idea. Just talk to my corner. Just like go to my happy place. Yeah. At least I know y'all.
Right, and you know they're like there for you and you guys just kind of like off each other. So yeah,
go ahead.
You were at a wedding yesterday?
Yeah, I was at a wedding last night watching them fights.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, was it like an MMA type of wedding? Were there like MMA fighters there or just no? You were just like weird on your phone watching fights.
Yeah, but it was funny because my phone was dying. Like my phone was literally on the last like percentage. And I look over and there's a couple other people that were like huddled over, and I was like, "Go make real quick." So I like went and made friends with them, and then the people in the back, they're watching the fights back, and like the people that are catering it, they're watching the fight there, so they're freaking out too. They're like, they keep running up, and then they're like, between like them being in the back and them being in the front, they go check my phone and run the back there. So we're all kind of like understanding of it.
Yeah. So what were they, because obviously they'll know you if they follow UFC. So is it kind of weird being at the wedding with like the staff kind of like, what's up?
No, it's always super cool. Cause like the only place I probably get recognized is in Denver or like in Colorado. And like, so it is like, I don't know. It's one of those moments where it's like, I'm not used to it still. And it's just like, cool. So anytime I ever get any recognition, I'm like, oh yeah, whatever. Like I'm trying to play. And then I'm like way more excited than any fan that's ever said any what's up to me. I'm like walking away, calling people up. I'm like, you never believe what just happened. I'll take a picture with you too, man.
Make sure you tag me. Make sure you tag me.
Right. Yeah, I'm not used to it yet, so I love it.
So how did it feel when you saw Nate Diaz get that guillotine?
Oh, I loved it. That's what I was thinking, because my last fight when I fought Matt Snell, I stole the guillotine when he fought Jim Miller. I stole the same type of guillotine a long time ago. Like I would always go arm and guillotine, and the moment they'd bring their arm back, I would steal that, yeah, like slither in. Yeah, And I thought it was cool because it was almost like directly of like how I got my last finish, which is funny because I totally copied from him. But I was like, damn, maybe but then I stole from him. So I don't really know. I guess I really just stole his move, but it was dope to watch it. And it's like Tony Ferguson doesn't really get submitted. So it was really cool to see that. And, you know, I know it was really cool to see him go out in like in the blaze of glory, you know, because there's like, who knows about that Hazmat matchup and like that kid's yeah. That kid's a killer. And it was just like, I felt like that card unfolded so perfectly. And if you're a Diaz fan, it unfolded as perfectly as you want it to. And, you know, I'm a huge Nick and Nate Diaz fan. So I was stoked on it.
He just like went off riding into like a unicorn, smoking a joint, like flicking everybody off into the sunset. Just like...
So I had to watch it on silent because I was still at a wedding, you know, so I wasn't watching it like out loud. So I was like confused in parts of it. It was like, was he like actually gassed or was he just having fun? Or like, it just seemed like it was such like a awkward fight if you couldn't hear commentary or just know what was going on exactly. Yeah. Where I'm like, damn, don't boy get hurt? Because he's like bent over holding his stomach. And I'm like, I don't know. It was just awkward. I thought there was a couple of timeouts in there and like they were just in the middle of a fight, not doing anything. So it was great. And it was like, it's so cool to see someone that's like, I'm such the opposite of like, all I do is just go forward, go fight. It's like, I can't control the moment as well as he's controlling it. He's fighting in a main event, 5 rounds and probably one of the biggest events of his life. And he's over here playing jokes, talking to someone in the corner. I was like, damn. I need to be that calm, like, you know, I need to be that cool, calm, collective and all that.
Yeah, but he's also had like a billion fights.
He grew up in that cage too. Yeah. It's like I've only fought in front of an audience with the UFC like one time, so it's like I'm not like next time I fight in front of a crowd, I don't even know how I'm gonna act on that, because it's like I've only fought in the crowd in the last 2 years, 3 years, one time, and it's like it's different, you know. It really is. Yeah, it's like I've been fighting in like my training, like in at Factory X, like where I train at, I have way more people screaming at me than in the UFC Apex. Like it's way louder, and it's like it like symbolizes those fights like way more than actually being in that Apex arena.
Yeah, well, it kind of helps you prep for it because it's difficult to prep for an audience. That makes sense. But if at your gym, they're already as loud as they will actually be at the UFC.
Does it not help? Yeah, they all dumb shit because it's like at this point I've been friends with all these dudes for like a good portion of my life, so it's like they'll like, I don't know, they're like cussing at me sometimes. Oh, why going for takedown, pussy? And then it's like the shit you hear about, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it's kind of, it's like all joking, but it's like it's also a little bit like, you know, I hear so much dumb shit in the middle of fights. So I'm like, dang, did that guy just really say that?
Do you have time to have conversations in your head with like something that happens in the crowd?
Yeah, way too much. One time I like heard that, like, we're doing announcing and I'm in the middle of fighting Arizona. I live in Colorado, so it's like a whole different state, and everybody's going for the kid that I'm fighting against. And right before the fight, I hear, put him in a body bag. And then I was like, damn, this crowd's obnoxious. And then I kind of circled the cage a little bit and I was like, I think that was my uncle. And I was like, damn, that was this. It was my crowd. I had two fans in the audience and he's yelling the most obnoxious shit the whole entire time. It's funny, but I've been in the middle of a fight and I'm like, did they just really yell that shit? Or like, I don't know. You know how when you fight, like your senses are so strong. It's like in the middle of a fight, I've been like, damn, this fool stinks. Like, or whatever it is. Like I have weird thoughts in my head. Like,
yeah,
maybe not weird. They're kind of normal, but it's like, you wouldn't expect that in a fight, you know? So it's kind of funny, like what goes on in my head or doesn't go on in my head, you know?
Yeah, no, for real. Were you able to hear the commentary team? Because when I fought, there was no crowd and I could hear Bisping talking. And I'm like, all right, well, he's saying that stuff I'm doing is good. Let me do some more of that. Do you hear the commentators when you fight?
Yeah, that's why I always kiss ass to Bisping and all of them. Because I swear one time, like I was against the cage, like Brandon would need that underhook right now. I'm like, is this fool trying to help me coach right? Like he's coaching. Damn, like it was like, yeah, it played to my advantage 100% because I'm like, I'm right in their corner, and he was like telling me what to do, and I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I should start doing that. And like, yeah, so I don't know. I think if I could play it well with them too, I got like 6 corners in that bitch.
right, because they start saying stuff, and And even if they're going for the other guy, they're saying, oh, he's doing that really well, which is like catching him in it or her in it. And you're just like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't, you know, duck my head to the left because they're like timing me.
Yeah, that's funny. Like, Brandon's getting caught with the hook. I'm like, oh shit, I am. Uh-oh. I like, sometimes like I overthink shit like that too. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah, but I have heard him. And then I swear one time I'm like, I think Michael Bisping's trying to give me some advice because he was talking a little louder than normal, you know?
Yeah. Did you speak to him after? Did you tell him like, oh, that thing you said helped me?
No, I never said that, but I did go afterwards because like right before my last fight, him and I were like maybe it was like two fights ago, but like I was watching like I always watch MMA like highlight reels and all that stuff, but I watched like a whole documentary on his life, and it, like I forgot that he was like not cornering me, but he was kind of cornering me, you know, whatever. But that he was commentating. So I went up after him and talked to him about that. I was like, damn, it was really cool to see that. And like, just, you know, I didn't know he was one of the few dudes that has been doing this shit his whole entire life. Like even back then, you know, like, I mean, I've been doing it forever, but like for him to be doing like kickboxing and like wrestling matches and all that stuff back then is like kind of crazy. And like, you know, it was unheard of at the time almost, you know?
Yeah, of course. It's really weird to see it now. Well, for me, for example, because before I just saw it as a martial art, and I was like, oh, I like this martial art too, and this martial art too. But now to see people growing up with it as MMA itself, you know, and to have all this access to all these fights and all this information, you're just like, I wish I would have started with that.
Did you start off in like one specific martial art then?
Yeah. Well, I started off with like Taekwondo, then I did karate, and I just liked it and what was around, and I did it, and yeah, it was just like that.
I'm lucky because you know, I was like a huge boxing fan back when I was younger, and like I wanted to box forever, but like we used to live by like this, like, I don't know, it was like a hole in the wall gym, and I didn't really know what it was exactly, but like I always heard of it. And then we got into MMA, and then all of a sudden my brother's like, hey, they have it was called the Ring of Fire. It was a huge promotion in Colorado at the time and in America. I was like a feeding promotion. And he goes, the Ring of Fire champs over there. So we go walk to the gym, and I went into there's this place called El Bandito's, right? And I mm-hmm. walk into this place and I'm like, it's a fucking restaurant. It was like Mexican restaurant. And I was like, bro, you were wrong. Place right next to it doesn't have a sign or anything. It's just like a whole, like literally like a shoebox of a place. And they're like, no, it's this place. So I walked in there, and it was one of the better gyms. And that's how I met Mark Montoya, my coach, and all that stuff. And I met all these like Chris Camozzi and like a bunch of just up and coming Colorado stars. And I just got so lucky to walk into like a real good MMA gym right off the bat. And it's like, even to this day, I mean, it's lessened in Colorado, but there was like a time where it's like, the coaches are like, some of these guys that were opening gyms were like frauds in my opinion, and they didn't know what they're doing, and then they're throwing people in fights. So it's like some of my first like amateur fights is like,
yeah,
some been doing it for 2 months, and it was like I would just go broke, and I'm like, yeah, I've been doing this shit for two years, you know, like 16. And then as soon as I turned 18, I started having my first fight. So it was like some of these guys just got kind of thrown to the wolves, and they didn't really know. And it's like, I could have walked into one of those gyms and my life would have been probably 100% different, you know. I would have had a fight 2 months in, got my ass whooped, quit, you know, like, I don't know what would have happened, but I'm lucky that that was the closest gym to my house. And I walked into a really good one with a lot of people with good knowledge, you know?
I've realized that, you know, there's a good like Thai boxing place or just a good overall gym. If you can smell the food from a tiny restaurant right next to it. So some of the best gyms I've been to.
Yeah, El Bandito's, because it was like, the Mexican restaurant right there, and then next to it was like this corner store where I know people were just selling drugs off the side of it, like like a corner store, and like there was just like a bunch of kids hanging out at the corner store. So it was like, it was always funny, like I'd walk in, there's dudes selling weed right here, there's Mexican right here, and then I would fight in between it, you know, make my stops in between the
you're right, you just go there, you go, have everything in one street.
Yeah exactly. I just didn't have to leave the block.
Yeah. What was the Mexican food there? Good?
No, not really, honestly. I only went there a handful of times, but it wasn't good.
No.
It wasn't a 10 out of 10 restaurant for sure, but it, you know.
At least the gym was.
Yeah, and the gym was, and the gym was like so tiny and like so like, you know, like when you have more than 20 people sweating in a room, it's just like, oh, you can just take, like, I'd open the door, you could, the humidity would hit you in the exactly. And then I remember, like, I would, like, because I was younger, so my mom would, like, bring me to the gym sometimes. I would have to ride my bike there, but, like, my mom would bring me to the gym sometimes, and, like, she'd go and she's like, it smells like shit in here, like, I'll just wait outside or, like, whatever it is, you know. But it was like, I was so used to the smell and the humidity and all the grossness, but it's like, I don't know, it's so nasty.
Do you feel like you can't really smell anymore after that? I feel like I've smelled so many, like, nasty gym bags that just my smell doesn't, it just doesn't pick up the sweaty disgustingness anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's it. So sometimes I'm like, damn, I think compared to my nose is definitely broke. I have a, what is it called? Like, where?
Deviated septum.
I have a deviated septum. So it's like, I can't really smell that well anyways. But yeah, so I always just make sure I have spray on me and anything. I don't want to be. You know, when you're like, I'm a smaller weight class, so I have to train girls, like, I train girls sometimes, and it's like, I have to make sure that I'm not the stinky dude in the room or anything. I'm trying to be, like, cognizant of all that stuff. Or, like, I teach sometimes, and it's like, I don't want to be teaching jujitsu and, like, I don't know, being the rank one. So it's like, they make fun sometimes, but I'm always in the gym, like, brushing my teeth before class or whatever it is. And I'm like, I can't smell myself necessarily, but it's like, I don't want to be that guy.
No, bam, but that's good. I think worse than the bad smelling guy is, like, the really hairy guy that never wears a rash guard and just like sweat and with their hair and their sweat there. I think that's by far the worst guy. So you're all good in that department.
Yeah. Now that there's rash guards, like, back in the day, like, motherfuckers wear shirts and I would just get waterboarded by some dude's loose shirt. He would hover over me. I'm like, yeah, I honestly think that's, like, that played a big role in me getting good at jujitsu. I was so claustrophobic and I was just like, anything to get out of from bottom was, like, my move. So it's like, it created scrambles, a lot of stuff. It's like, it's either that or I'm tapping to suffocation and waterboarding and all that stuff. So I think just being a germaphobe at a young age, I was like, it made me better at jujitsu because I was like, I do not want to fucking be on bottom with this dude sweating on me, you know?
So what made you keep going? If it's something that you're just like, oh, I don't want them to touch me and stuff with their nastiness, what made you keep going back and getting better at it?
And honestly, I have an older brother that me and him just, like, we were obsessed with MMA. So we watched MMA every day and we learn and try moves on each other. So when I went to the gym, I honestly thought I was going to be a black belt right off the bat. I remember I walked into the gym and I was like peeking through the windows and stuff. And I saw some, like, maybe 7-year-old girl hit a move that I thought I invented. I thought, like, it was like that sit up sweep where you like you grab the ankles and then push them over or whatever. It was so simple. It was so dumb. And I remember thinking, like, I invented a move. Like, I hit it all the time. And some little girl hit it and I was like, oh, I'm not good at all. Like, oh. But I went into the gym like, with like a fair amount of knowledge, you know, because I was grappling with my brother every day for like 2 years straight and we're trying stuff and all that stuff. So I think what kept me going to the gym is, like, you know, I was 16 years old and every once in a while I'd submit like a grown-ass man and I was like, I would walk out so confidently and I was like telling people, like, you don't understand, like, I'm beating up cops right now, I'm beating up people like, I was so stoked, like, as a youngin, like, you know, like, those are really big moments in your life, like, where you're like, dang, I can hold myself against a grown man, like, what would, like, keep me in, especially during those times, was like, one, I wanted to beat my brother's ass, so that always helped out, like, you know, trying to get that edge on him. But I would have a fair amount of success at a young age, you know, and, like, walking in, and I think that was, like, always like, oh wow, this is, like, maybe I could be good at this, you know. And it's like, I started at such a young age, and I was going against grown men, so I was kind of in my back of the head. I remember telling one of my friends, like, I was like, I think if we're gonna get into a sport, like, this is the sport to get into. It's so young. You know? I'm like, no, nobody our age was doing it, you know. And any 16-year-old in the gym, it was such a barbaric scene back then. Like, people get knocked out every week, you know, and like nobody really knew the repercussions of it. We were just going balls to the wall. But it's like, anytime there's a 16-year-old, I would chase him out of the gym, you know. And it was like, I'm my friend, I'm like, I think we could be good at this, like, we should try this, like, we should, I don't know, like, this could be our career one day, you know.
Yeah, well, and here you are as your career.
I know, and it sucks too, because that was my boy, and like, I like lost contact with him. Like, there's no way I could reach out with him. But it's like, I wonder if he knows I'm in the UFC now, because like, me and him are so obsessed with it, you know, we watch it every day and all that stuff. And it was like, I always wonder, I'm like, I wonder if he ever found out that I made it to the UFC or whatever, which I'm sure he did, but it just sucks that I can't like reach out. Yeah.
Did you just lose contact with him due to like an argument or something? Or
no, not at all. Not at all. Like, you know, like I think like school moved on and then he just like didn't have social media and changed his number. And it was just like, I never was able to reach out to him again. And like, you know, everybody else is so like available. You can contact everybody mm-hmm. through social stuff. And he was never like the social media type. So it's like, I don't know. I'd have to like find his parents or something, or like go to his like old parents' house, like his old parents' house, and hope that they're still there to go kind of reach out to him. But yeah, no, it was like, it was my boy. And like, we just like all of a sudden lost contact. And yeah, yeah. We never had no argument or malice or any of that stuff. It was just, I don't know. It was just, you know, like life goes on, I guess. And we just lost contact. And yeah, I was like still wondering, like, I wonder if he ever found out I made it to the UFC, because it was like our obsession, you know?
Yeah.
Is him and I would like, because we ride the bus home together, and him and I would like lure kids from a different neighborhood and be like, yeah man, you want to box, we'll go box and stuff. And we go, and me and him were both like, we're so obsessed with MMA that we're gonna win the fight for sure. So we go beat up to walk all the way back to their neighborhood because they take our bus home, and like I had the boxing gloves on, so we box them up and then they'd have to walk all the way home. And like, that was our thing. We do that shit on like a weekly basis.
Oh man, that sucks that you guys lost contact.
Yeah, it is good. I know. I gotta try to reach out, honestly, now I'm thinking about it.
Oh, maybe he'll see this and he'll be like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'll reach out.
Yeah.
So how many times did you have to use you know, grappling or whatever at like a family barbecue or something?
Let's be honest. I got in trouble for it one time because my auntie had she was married to this dude. Real big douchebag, by the way. So they're not married anymore, thank God. But one time, like, I was playing with my cousin, we fake wrestle around and stuff, and then he jumped in and he's like, oh, I'll get you. And I started choking him. Like, I was like, you know, like, I don't think he knew how to tap or anything. So I like took his back, put him in a choke, and just like mopped him up real quick, you know. And my dad pulled me over the side. He's like, you can't be doing that shit to your uncles or like whoever. He's like, you can't be doing that. It's like, he goes, if we have you in martial arts, you can't be doing shit like this anymore. Like you got to give them respect and all that. But I remember, and I'm still proud of it this day, because I never really liked that guy. It was like, I remember like they had to pull me off to the side and they're like, yeah, no more doing that shit in public. You can't embarrass people like that. Like, which is true, and it was respectable, but I'm still like, I didn't really give a shit about that guy specifically. But one time specifically, I got in a lot of trouble for that one.
So how did that come up? Was he just like, oh, you think you do karate? You think you do UFC? Yeah.
You know how bigger dudes get? Like, you know, you probably have to deal with that shit all the time. Oh, you're a fighter? Oh, okay.
Yeah, oh my God.
Try to put me in, I think that what he did is his dumbass tried to put me in a headlock. And as soon as he did, I just took his back, like all of a sudden put him on the ground. I had both hooks in. And then once I popped my head out, I just had a full on choke in his ass. And he didn't know what hit him. It was like 20 seconds of just him thinking he could manhandle me. He's way bigger, you know, him thinking he can manhandle me, start dragging me to the ground. Next thing I had his back. It was like a full on choke. And he's like,
So did you leave like flexing?
No.
Did you go like, yeah.
No, the moment I hit the choke, I knew I was in trouble. Everybody like, Brandon. I was like, I look up and I'm like, oh shit. But yeah, no, in my head, I was flexing my ass off. I'm still flexing out that one too, honestly. it was still a big pride moment of mine.
Yeah. Well, now in hindsight, your aunt kind of thanks you for it.
Yeah.
She probably looks back and she's like, yeah, that's my boy.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I get up at the table. They're like, yeah, you remember when Brandon choked up or whatever? And it's like, oh, I remember. Yeah, but I get over that. Like, you know, I have a lot of family and like a lot of cousins and stuff and uncles like that are like, you know, we're all roughhousing. And then, you know, I grew up in like my family, like they scrap, you know, like all my family's kind of fighters. And I've been in situations where me and my uncles are grappling around. And then like after that situation, my parents are like looking at me like, no, don't be doing it. I had to take it out silent. Yeah, I had to take it out silent when I was younger. Like when I was like 16 and like 17, I had to lose those fights and just forfeit the match almost, you know?
Yeah. So is your family coming over today? Cause I saw Sunday you have your nephews over and you teach them boxing or something.
Yeah. So I usually have my little cousins over every Sunday. And that's like my thing that we do with them is just teach them how to fight. Honestly, I have to probably stop that too. Cause one of them got in a fight. One of them got in a fight this weekend. And then the other one jumped in and I was like, they're like, yo, like, you got to talk to him about this. And I was like, it's like hard for me not to be proud because, like, you know, like, I don't know, like one of them's a little smaller and the other one's is like his older brother, or like their stepbrothers or whatever. I was like, you know, that's how me and my brother grew up, is like, well, like he would get in a fight and I would jump in, you know, or like it'd be vice versa. Yeah. It was like, you know, like we always had each other's back. So it was like, I have to scold him today. I have to talk to him about it. Like, that's what, like, I specifically have to go talk to him about it today, but it's hard for me. You know, good job. I'm proud of you guys. What'd you guys do? Did you land the hook?
Yeah. Oh my God. For sure. You're going to do that though. You're just going to be like, oh, you know, you can't use it, but tell me like what technique did you use?
Yeah. And then like the cousin that like originally got in the fight, like he's so shy and all that. So it's like, there's not like in my head, there's no way he started the fight. So it's like,
yeah,
I assume that they were in the right, but like, who knows? Who knows what really goes on? They're probably like, my cousin UFC fight, I'll beat your ass. Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna have to talk to him today and just, you know, but yeah, I don't know. But like I said, my family's all just really scrappy and I don't know. And I think that's like a cool way. Like, it's really the only way I can bond with people at this point. It's like, I'm so obsessed that I don't have a life outside of fighting. It's like, I don't really know what else to do. I'm like, you guys want to learn how to fight? And of course they're boys and they're rambunctious and all that. So they're always down for it. So it works out. And then we like do like a little bit of run and stuff together. So they help me get ready for my fight in a sense too, you know, and a little bit of my piece and all that. So it's really good. It's a really good way to get to know them and kind of break the like barrier of they're in that awkward like teenage age where they're where, you know, they're, it's hard for them to open up. They don't think they could relate to adults and all that stuff. So I think it's a good way for me to kind of break those barriers, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And was that from a family affair too?
This is some bullshit. Have you ever seen that like tortilla challenge on YouTube or whatever the hell they've been doing? Like,
yeah, they have like water in their mouth or something.
Yeah. So these we were out in Vail and these dudes bought a pack of tortillas on the way there. Like, we went up to like the mountains to go watch a fight, and we were gonna do the challenge or whatever. But sure enough, before it even started off, everybody just smacking each other at tortillas. Homeboy, I'm sitting in my chair watching the fights. Homeboy comes around back to go hit me with a tortilla, full on smacks me in the face, and the tortilla wraps around and then hits me on this side. He got a double whammy out of it.
So what'd you do after?
Well, I had to take the L, man, because I was over there hitting with tortilla. I had it coming, you know. It's not like I didn't deserve it a little bit, but I still got to get a little bit of revenge or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So what'd your coach say to it when you show up with a, you know, with a bruise in your lip and you tell him it's a tortilla challenge?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to have to be like, yeah, this is actually from sparring. I felt so dumb too. Cause it was like one of those situations that it's like, you know, like sparring's on Friday and I go leave sparring unscathed. And then I have a wedding the next day I had to go to. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, it look good. Stuff and I go get my haircut and we do this dumbass tortilla thing, and next thing you know, I'm going to this wedding of like a family member of mine forever, and just with a purple lip, a fat lip, and this is all purple, and they're like, oh, we did you do that fighting? I'm like, yeah.
Some of the injuries and stuff, I'm like, yeah, that was fighting. And then I have one in my knuckle, and I don't know if you can see it, but
oh yeah.
Somebody asked me, he's like, oh, did you get that like fighting somebody? And I was like, oh yeah, they bit me and stuff. It was getting like a broccoli out of the oven. Like my fat, like a broccoli, really, to burn yourself for all things. But yeah, I definitely use fighting to help me get out of stuff like that.
I do so much shit like that. Like, I'm so like, for an athlete or considered being an athlete or whatever, so unathletic and do so much dumb shit. I'm like limping around, like, what happened? I'm like, oh, you know, I just like was getting out of my chair, tripped over it. Like, I have to make up these stories. At least have fighting as a good fallback. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got kicked, got jumped, honestly.
Yeah, I run into stuff a lot, like especially like hip height. I just run into so many things, like just the edges of things. I end up having massive bruises on the side of my hips just from doing that. But yeah. I say you it's fighting.
You don't realize it until like you have like an actual like injury too. It's like my elbow like was swollen up a couple weeks back, like a month back. And I didn't realize how much times I bumped my elbow a day, where it's like, I'm walking in a door, barely graze my elbow and it doesn't hurt like normally, but it's like when you have a big old nick on it or something like that, or it's swollen, I would like walk and hit a door and I'd be falling to the ground crumbling. And it's like, I'm like, this is such a dumb sport. I think that on a daily basis, but like, what have I gotten myself into? I'm like, I'm in so deep too. Like, I'm in so deep that it's like,
I have to keep going.
It's too late to go to college. Like, I don't know what else to do at this point. It's like, I'm so close to this belt that it's like, I don't know that, like, I have to commit.
Yeah, for sure. Isn't it like horrible when, if you hit your elbow and stuff and then you're trying to post on it? I feel like that's when I notice it the most. Like when I put my elbow on the mat to go for anything and I'm like, oh, water bubble, ow.
Yeah, and that was exactly it. I would like try to get up and then I'd just fall back down because I was like in so much pain. All right, I guess we're playing guard today. I guess we're not getting up. It's like that. There are so many times I'd go post up and then fall or do something of that sort, you know, and I don't know. And it's like, I don't think people like realize that, like how much fighters train through injuries and how hurt we really are in a daily, you know. And it's like, I try to like you try to work through it. And it's like, you know, if you have a fight coming up, it's like, you can't really help but work through it. But it's like, fighters are going in there and like, you're damaged. Like the whole entire point of fighting is damaging someone's body or damaging your own body. And you're doing that with your body. You're throwing bones at someone and hitting them with the bones. And it's like, I don't think people realize how compromised some of these fighters are walking into a fight, you know? And it's like, I've been, when I entered that fight with Moreno and Kai, my whole entire beginning of my UFC career, I couldn't grapple. Like I couldn't grapple. I couldn't wrestle. I was just striking with one hand because my shoulder, like, anytime I threw a jab, if like I threw a jab and hit somebody with, or like, and like maybe our punches collided or something, my shoulder would pop out of place. If I was digging for under. Yeah. So my first like 3-4 fights in the UFC, like I couldn't grapple. Like I had zero grappling in those matches. And it was like fighters enter the cage so compromised, you know. And it's like nobody really, and you have to keep it like a hush thing because it's like you want your paycheck. Mm-hmm. Like if you want your paycheck, or like for me, I was on a good roll, and it was like I'm fighting the top guys in my weight class, and it was like I just started off in the UFC, so it was like I couldn't pass up the opportunity. Like they gave me Tim Elliott on a 1-week notice to get my UFC debut, and it was like I couldn't really train for that fight anyways. But it's like, what am I gonna not go to the UFC? And then after that, they gave me Kai Car France, and I loved the matchup. And it was like, I didn't think I would have to grapple that much in the fight. So I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, I'll take that fight without getting the surgery. And it was like, okay, I can buy a little bit of time. So then I fight Kai Car France. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, hey, we got Moreno in 1 week. If you can take this short notice. And I'm like, damn, that's the number one contendership there. And it's like, you know, it's like, why wouldn't I just see, like, press my luck to the fullest? And in that Moreno fight, it was like that's when my luck ran out, you know. And that's what was happening like on a weekly basis in practice. It's like my coach, like, if you ever seen a Moreno fight, my coach popped in my shoulder like nothing. And it was like because he did it every week up until then, you know, because my shit was so compromised. And it was like I was entering in such like a non like healthy way. And it was like and then on top of that, like Brandon Moreno, who's like currently the champion, and it's like yeah, it was like I don't know. You're entering the biggest fight of your life, just so compromised, and it's like you don't know how many of these fighters are doing it, you know. And it's like, and it's honestly a vast majority of us.
And when did that shoulder thing start? Like, what made it happen? What made it be a recurring issue?
I think so it was a wrestling incident. I shot in on a shot, and I think I just went shoulder down, and they threw the hip into me, and it just popped out, and I was like, oh fuck, but I had issues with the other shoulder at the time too. So I knew how to like pop it back into place. And then from there, like I tried to rehab it for a little bit, but I was like so close to the UFC. And it was like, I had a fight right before the UFC when it originally was happening. But it was like, I just knew I just had to try to rehab it and get better without the surgery. And it was like, you know, if I could rehab it long enough and then get to the UFC, maybe the UFC will pay for it eventually or something of that sort. And like, that's always, and like I know a bunch of fighters that have that going on in their head. They're like, well, you know, I'm so close to UFC, like maybe, you know, maybe this fucking 9-to-5 job, but like, you know, we'll get me by while I can get to the UFC or whatever it is. And like that was going on through my head because that surgery's expensive, and it's like, you know, you're so close, and it's like, damn, can I make it with this? And like I was having a fair amount of success in like the regional scene with a fucked up shoulder, so I was like, ah, we'll see how we can push it, you know. But like I remember that Tim Elliott fight. He had me wrestled up against the cage, and I was like, my coach was like, underhook, and I went to go do it, and in the middle of doing it, I'm like, oh fuck, my shoulder. So it was just like I had to accept the loss of position for a second until I could get like another way out. But it was like I couldn't bring my shoulder over my arm without feeling like it was going to dislocate, you know. Yeah, so shoulders are such a bad problem. Like once it dislocates once, it'll happen over and over again. And it's like, and once it starts happening over and over again, it's like, you need surgery. Like there's no other way around it. So I was in a fucked position right then.
So did you have surgery on both?
Yeah, I have like a latter J surgery on both of these things.
Oh.
Yeah, but this one happened when I was younger. So like this was happening. Like one time I was wrestling with one of my uncles and that popped out one of them too. So yeah, so I mean, I guess now I have good shoulders thanks to my surgeon got me now. But I don't know. I think I have just like bad shoulders or something. I don't know what it is exactly, but
yeah. So yeah. Why didn't before not before, but like after, you know, the fight with the doctors come in and you're like, oh, anything hurts? You'd be like, oh, my shoulder in the fight in the second round. That time that I. did a jab.
I did in that Tim Elliott fight and then in the Kai Car France fight, but then I did it in the Tim Elliott fight and I was like, they said I could probably rehab it a little bit, but then they offered me Kai Car France and Kai Car France was like number 7 and I was like, damn, that's such a good opportunity. Yeah. And like, you know, we're in quarantine time, so it was like I was like, oh, I have to take this fight. And then after the Kai Car France fight, before I left Fight Island, we're like, you know, I had 2 weeks like before I even like after the fight pretty much is when I think Cody Garbrandt had to pull out of the title fight and then they were given Alex Perez the title shot. Mm-hmm. Which left Brandon Moreno without an opponent. He was ranked number 1 and I was like, well, I mean, you know, I got this far.
Yeah. Then,
like it was like 2 weeks away, so I was like, I could get one training camp done with like, you know, like I could do one training camp and then get 2 fights off of it, you know, kill 2 birds with 1 stone type of thing. And that's kind of what was going on in my head. And I was like, you know, I made it this far. It's like, let's see if I can just pop off. And then right before this title fight, I get surgery and then go on with it, you know, but you know, my luck ran out.
Yeah, no, it sucks, man. But do you feel like it adds to your confidence? Because if you went to all these fights compromised and now you're okay, do you feel like it adds to your confidence?
Yeah, 100%. I think that, I steadily think that because it's like when, like Kai Car France did really good against Brandon Moreno and it's like, it, like I beat that dude virtually with one hand and no grappling for the like a year right before they a year of no jujitsu. And like jujitsu is like one of my favorite things to do. No wrestling at all. Wrestling's where I was hurting it the most. And it was like I was beating him where he was most comfortable at. And it was like, and then with the Moreno fight is like this like a little bit of the same thing. Is like when my shoulder popped out, I was in a really good position to start attacking and like the fight and like attack a leg and stuff. And it was like I was doing that to Moreno with zero grappling for the last year and a half, you know. And it was like it added some confidence for sure. And but like at the same time, it was just like it was just so great at the like, you know, when you make your UFC debut and all that stuff, it was good to just feel like I was like, damn, I belong, you know. Because I remember when I fought Tim Elliott, I was just like, you know, I'm probably gonna lose this fight, and it's like if I lose this fight, then it's like at least I made it to the UFC. And it's like that's more than some people. And like I had that going on in my head. And then I won the fight and then I won the next fight. And then I'm like, damn, I might be a champion one day. Like and then, you know, every a little bit where I was like, it went from just being like, I was so okay with just like, just being there, you know, I was just like, damn, I made it. And it was like, you know, I fucking, you know, like when you're a fighter, you sacrifice so much. I fucking lost everything. I've lost friends over this shit. I've lost everything, you know, and it's time with family. Like there's not enough to say about how much sacrifices people put forth to be a fighter. And I lost my youth virtually, you know what I'm saying? It's like I was dying as a kid and all this dumb shit, not, you know, like not going to parties and all that stuff at a young age. And it was like I was like, oh well, at least I get the cool t-shirt and it's like I get my name on the back of it and it's like I get to make my UFC debut. And it's like win or lose, it was like it meant the world to me, you know. And like I was like, damn, this is cool. And you know, and then my confidence started getting up and I'm like, damn, I'm actually like better than these guys. And it's like, once I started to realize that, then my whole entire like mindset shifted. Like probably after that Kai Car France fight, I was like, damn, like I could probably be champion of this fucking division. And then I go against Moreno and then I'm going against all the top guys at this point. I've only faced top 10 opponents in the UFC. And now it's like, I know where I belong, you know, now I know I could be champion and I know I belong here. And now I know it's like, you know, like I made it out to be way bigger than it was.
This, I bet, is something that your coach Mark was probably telling you before that you didn't really believe. Cause I'm sure he saw this in you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that my whole entire life too. It's like one of my main training partners was Joe Warren and he was the Bellator champion, like at 135, and I was helping him get ready. But at the time, I was helping him, like, I was the main training partner for it, because he was going against nothing but Brazilians. They're like jiu-jitsu strikers, and that's what I was. Yeah. You know? And he was telling me, he's like, dude, you need to quit your job. I'm like 18, 19 years old. He's like, you need to quit school. You need to quit your job and just take some time to be champion. And I was in my head, I was like, this is the most important thing that I was going to do, was just be Joe Warren's training partner for Bellator and help him with a belt. And it was like, at the time, I was so okay with that. You know, I was like, you know, like if I could help this guy win a Bellator belt, I can tell my grandkids about it for the rest of my life, or my kids about it. And I was like, this will be the coolest part of my life. And like, I remember being okay with it. And then him telling me, he's like, you know, like, you need to quit your job. Like, you have real talent, you have real skill and all this stuff. And like, you need to quit, because I was doing so much extra shit. You know, I was a full-time student. I was a full-time worker, and then somehow making it to practice in between. And I was doing that for years. But I remember him telling me that. And I remember him just being like, yeah, no, that's the dumbest idea. I'm going to quit my job to be a fighter. And like, I was like, no, I'll just help you out. And like, you know, and I'll push it as long as I could. And like, I remember thinking that in my head. And then I would have like a couple instances, like where like a UFC dude, like a guy in my weight class would come to the gym and I would like trash him. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I am. I remember one time I was like 19. I beat some dude who just fought for the belt. He fought for the belt. He lost. But I dominated him. I called my friend up and I was like,
bro,
I think I'm good. Like, I don't know. Like, I was like, I think I might have a shot at this, you know? And it was like, it was just something to do while I was in college, you know, for a little bit. And it was like, I love the sport. And it was like, I was never going to not fight. But I remember there was like a moment in my head where I was like, I think I'm good, actually. Like, I might be good at this. Like, this might be something that I can do, you know? And maybe my momentum didn't really shift that hard then, but I remember just like, damn, I could hang with some of these guys, you know? And that was so cool. That was such a cool moment in my life where I'm like, damn, maybe this is something that I could do, you know? And when you have those like little look realizations and all that stuff, and I'm still having them as I'm going forward and all that stuff. But like, I don't know. That was like such an important day to me. Like, I remember being young, and it was just training too. So you don't ever know what happens in a real fight compared to training. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, like, it really is. And I don't try to stack too much thoughts into that. But at that time, it was like so important to me, you know, because I was a full on student and all this stuff. And it was like, I wanted to quit my job, or I wanted to quit school. But I was like, this would not be worth it, you know. And it was like shortly after that, in the next year or so, I was like, all right, I'm quitting school. And I'm just going to chase this shit full time and just hope for the best, you know. And it's like, if I don't make it, so be it. At least I'm doing something that I've never known anybody else to try to do, you know, besides the people in the gym.
So did that also change the approach you had to training, the added confidence? Did you train differently because of it now?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think I've always been like one of those, like I was a gym rat, you know, like that's all I would finish whatever I'd have to do and go to school. So I was in the gym all day. It was like, I never not trained, but when I quit school, I got sleep. Like, that's what I remember. It's like, I could sleep a little bit. I could take a nap or something. Or I could just like, you know, I was getting a little bit more sleep than I was. 'Cause I was rocking like 4 hours of sleep tops, you know? And it was like, I did that for years too. Like, I was doing that for years. And it wasn't until like, that was another thing. I was like huge in that Kai Car France fight is, we're on opposite time zones. Like, you already know you're up late, we're on opposite time zones. So it was like, nobody on my team was sleeping, but it was like, I was so used to that lifestyle of just sleeping an hour here or there and then used to it. So it's like, I pretty much woke up to that, like, what is that? That like the UFC song, that Wonderwall or whatever, where they play that like right before the
highlight. Yeah. Film. Yeah. I know what you mean, but I don't know what it's called.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what it's called either, but that Oasis song, I think what it's called, out here in the field. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was sleeping in the back. I woke up and then I was like, all right, well, let's fucking go. And like, I pretty much got warmed up for like 20, 30 minutes and then fought. And then it was like, you know, like I was so used to that lifestyle that it was like ineffective, you know? I remember Alex Hernandez being in the back, like he was in the back of me. He's like, I can't believe you just slept and then woke up and just fought your ass off. And then we're pretty much ready to go take a nap again at that point.
That's crazy, man. Mostly like when I speak to fighters, they're always like, yeah, I have my watch and I check my, you know, my heartbeat and it's like three times the amount it is normally and I'm freaking out and I'm in bed, but I don't know what to do to be able to sleep before you walk out.
Yeah, that's another cool thing. So I have a teammate named Jonathan Martinez in the UFC and he's doing great things and stuff. But like, he's like one of those cats too. It's like, like you, there's videos of him like fighting like in like seventh grade, eighth grade, all the above. I feel like I don't put too much stock into like what some of these guys do. They're like, oh, I need a full 8 hours of sleep. I need to eat this at this time and all this. And it's just like, I don't really give a shit. I'm gonna go out there and fight. Like, I don't really care how much sleep I got or what goes on before or after. It's like, I don't play that. Like, I don't play too much into that. It's just like, I'm just gonna go fight a motherfucker. And it's like, yeah, I'm gonna try my best for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes or whatever the fuck it is. And I'm trying to finish it the whole entire time. But it's like, I don't play too much into all the other bullshit that comes around. And it's like, I think that's always been like a huge advantage of mine. It's just like, you know, like I fought my whole entire life. It's like, you know, it's nothing different than walking to the park with a couple of my friends and like, and fighting some dude with a couple of his friends. It's like, it really isn't besides a name and how much stock you put into it. It's like, if you put that stock into it, then it's going to, you're going to blow it out of proportion. But if you don't, then it's just another fucking fight. And I'm back at the fucking playground fighting with my friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for real. Because I saw you had like something with like psoriasis and stuff, and you were changing a lot of your diet.
I still like I'll go on all meat like after I've never tried it during weight cut time, but okay. I go all meat diets, and I've tried a couple other little things like just meat and fruits and all that stuff, and it gets rid of my psoriasis. I didn't know how to like maintain it. So when I was young, or like it's been only like a couple of years that I've had it, mm-hmm. but I was putting like medication on it and stuff, and it was like kind of like keeping it away a little bit. But then I realized like psoriasis is an autoimmune disease, and autoimmune diseases come from your stomach and stuff. So I was just like doing more research, and it was like, we have a lot of Muslims on our team, and they went on a, like they do a, what's it called, where they fast?
They fast during the day until the sun, Ramadan?
Yeah, they're doing Ramadan, and I was rereading Siddhartha, like the Buddhist book, and Siddhartha went like forever without like eating. It was like months or years or whatever the hell he did it like without eating. And then I watched this George St. Pierre podcast, and he was talking about like starving. So everything just led to me like, fuck it, I'm not gonna eat for 3 days and just see what happens, you know? And I didn't eat for 3 days, and I was mainly just doing it for a mind state, but I noticed quickly like my psoriasis went away quick, and I was like, okay, what does that tell you then? Like, and I was trying to take away, I was like, okay, it's something I'm eating for sure that is making my skin break out and making me look like, because I only have it on my legs really, but it was like I quickly realized, oh, it was something of that sort that is doing it. And so I just like right off the bat, I was like, okay, I'm not gonna eat gluten. And then I was trying that, and it was still there, but it go away a little bit. And then The only thing that's actually absolutely worked is one, starving myself for a few days, because that gets rid of it really quick. But eating all meat, like all meat diet, is one of the better ways that I've gotten to beat like my autoimmune disease or psoriasis specifically. I don't really know about other autoimmune diseases, but that's what helped me. Is I think my body has a hard time breaking things down, and like specific, and I grew up probably eating like shit. So if anybody deserves psoriasis, it's 100% me.
Cause I would eat like hot Cheetos all day.
Yeah, for sure. Hot Cheetos, old cookies. Like, I'm an overindulger. I'm working on it. But it was one of those situations where it was like, I realized it was stuff I was eating. And once I started cutting things out, it would go away, and like little parts would go away and all this stuff. But once I went to an all meat diet, it went away completely. But when I'm back in fight camp, I don't necessarily like, I don't know how to cut weight on an all meat diet. I just know how to like live that way, but I don't know how to cut weight healthy and just do a training camp successfully with it. And I've never really tried, and I don't really want to try it at this juncture in my career. Yeah. You know, I'm like so close to fighting for a belt at this point that it's like, I'm not going to risk anything at this point. It's just, I'm going to do what got me here and all that stuff. So it's like, as soon as like fight camp starts, I jump right back on my diet of like eating what my nutritionist wants me to do.
Have you ever done those tests? Because I think you either send like a blood sample or like a urine sample, and they test to see how your body reacts to certain things.
No, I haven't. And I've been meaning to do that for like 3 years. So, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's been on my to-do list, and it's like, I always like just forget about it, you know, and just life goes on or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. So it would be ideal to start doing that and just kind of seeing what's fucking with me majorly, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Well, like, I'll send you the one that I did. Cause like, I don't remember what it's called. I think it was like Viome or something. And then on the app, you get the results. It did take forever though to just took forever. But it was like, yeah, you can't have coffee and stuff. And I was like, well, it's not my results.
Delete. That's another thing too, is like at a certain point, it's like psoriasis sucks, but I don't have it like all over compared to some people. Like I'm lucky where I just have it on my legs and like it sucks and it's itchy and stuff. It's a little annoying, but I'm not gonna not ever eat cookies again. Like what? I'll just scratch my legs afterwards. You know, I gotta find that balance. So it's like I do good sometimes of just being on an all meat diet, and sometimes I'm just like, fuck this. Like I want to eat cookies and live my life, you know, especially after a fight. I'm just doing whatever I want to do, you know, because it's like, if I want to follow that diet correctly, I'm not drinking any sugars. I'm not having Gatorade. I'm not doing any of that stuff. And it's like, that's really hard to do. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm getting my electrolytes through specifically like, what is it called? Like, what's that salt? Like that pink salt, Himalayan salt.
Yeah. Himalayan salt. Yeah.
I get my electrolytes through Himalayan salt. And it's like, I don't like just drinking water and Himalayan salt for the rest of my life. Like it bothers me a little bit. So it's like, like I'll make sacrifices for sure. And, you know, I'll get back to my ways every once in a while, but for the most part, it's like, I like bouncing in between the diets, you know?
Yeah. I used to chug Gatorade after training when I was a kid, 'cause I thought I was being like super healthy, athletic. I was just like, athletes drink Gatorade. And I would just chug like a whole like gallon of it. It was crazy.
It's so funny to like the way I, like how I grew up and like what I was doing is like, I would wake up, eat a big ass bowl of cereal with milk, which I'm horribly allergic to milk. You know, I'm allergic to dairy and all that stuff. I would eat like a bowl of sugar milk and then eat some ramen noodles later on in the day and then have some like fucking macaroni. It was like, I don't think I had one vitamin like on multiple days of my life, you know, and just drink pop in between. I'm like, oh, I'm thirsty. I'm gonna go soda, whatever the fuck it is. And it's like, yeah. So I fucked up a lot throughout my life. And it's like, that's why I think I'm kind of paying a lot of repercussions now of like, of psoriasis and all that stuff, because it's like, you know, I lived really recklessly when I was young. And it was just like a little bit, of, you know, like nobody's really educated it on that stuff when I was younger too. It's like, we thought all that stuff, you know, like you eat a bowl of cereal in the morning, at least in America. Like that's kind of like how the routine was. It's like you eat a bowl of cereal, which is like American cereals, all sugar, you know, like nothing else. I was eating sugar and then I was putting sugar in my sugar. Like I was eating
Which cereal did you have? What was your cereal?
Cinnamon Toast, my favorite shit. And this cinnamon. Is awesome. You guys ever heard of Cookie Crisp out there?
No, but I grew up in America, so I know what you're talking about.
I would eat Cookie Crisp, and this is it was also bomb, is when nobody wasn't looking, I'd throw Oreos in my Cookie Crisp. I would eat that in the morning. Yeah, I was horrible, and I was like a really big like I was addicted to sugar. I would like another thing I'd do all the time is I would drink like 4 things of Dr. Pepper a day, and that was like, yeah. So like when I was younger and I'm like running around all day every day, summertime or whatever it is like I would not have any vitamins. You know, my parents are working all day, so it's like I would just go and run around the summer, fucking not drinking water, drinking Pepsi, and all. That's like cutting weight to 125 isn't fit to me, because it's like, you know, I grew up without nutrients.
I could do this.
Because yeah, I'm a survivor.
Oh, that's crazy, man. So were you like a chubby kid?
No, I've always been pretty skinny, you know. Like when I was younger, I like bulked up. It was like I always ran like I would do this, but I would be running around all day with my friends and doing like a bunch of dumb shit. And you know, we're doing all that athletic stuff too. So I was outdoors all day eating sugar, but like I was eating sugar all day, ramen noodles all day, and all the worst shit for it. Like in America, they outlawed Martian or whatever, the ramen noodle maker, because they found out how unhealthy ramen noodles are for people. So it's like outlawed now, at least in Colorado. I don't know about the other states, but like.
Yeah, I think Colorado is the more like health conscious state. Well, obviously you have like California, but Colorado is a big one for that.
Yeah. And it's, I think like having the mountains and just like the beautiful outdoors and all that stuff, it just kind of helps out. But yeah, for sure. Like I did a lot of dumb stuff growing up, and you know, there's a lot of those, like a little bit like nobody was really educated on this stuff. Yeah. It's like my parents come home and like make some greasy ass shit. And like our home cooking was like enchiladas, like soaked with all that stuff. And it was like, I don't know. It's funny. Like looking back at like me ignoring my stomach problems when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, my stomach hurts, no big deal, you know. But it was like I was like putting it before, I was like, you know, like like, I think it's like 70% of like Hispanic people or Mexican people are like allergic to dairy. And it was like, we were eating that, you know, I was throwing cheese on my shit. I was drinking cereal in the morning or eating cereal in the morning, just doing the worst of the worst. And it was like, I didn't know why my stomach was hurting every day or whatever it is. You know, I was just living with it and just thought that I was part of life, you know?
Yeah. So was it hard to transition to, like, you know, MMA, they start talking about diets and eating clean. Was that a hard transition, or was it hard to learn about? Because if you didn't know anything, go from eating cereal in the morning to.
Yeah, no, I mean, the real hard transition is like, I wasn't doing it. Like, I was like, I fought at 135, like at the beginning of my career. Cause there wasn't really any 25ers in division or anyone around that was like 125. So I would eat donuts and stuff like the week of the fights. It's like, it was a little bit like later on in my career, like where I was like, okay, like now I gotta be on a strict diet. And it was a lot of trial and error too. It's like when I started making 125 every day, this is the only thing I would eat. It's like, I would eat eggs in the morning, and then I would eat salmon and sweet potatoes and a little bit of spinach every day until I could make 125 or till weigh-ins were. I would do the most unhealthy shit, but it was just so much trial and error, and I just didn't know what I was doing, really, you know. And it was just, I hope this works out. And I would realize in between all that stuff, I'm like, well, my body feels different, you know. And it was like, it feels a little bad, stomach aches in the morning or whatever it is. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I think I'm allergic to dairy. And that was like one of the first things I realized. It's like, okay, like I'm allergic to dairy, so I cut dairy out. Started feeling way better, and it was just like kind of all that. And then it's like I started researching, studying, and all that stuff. And then I realized I was doing so much unhealthy shit that I was like, damn, that was my lifestyle. And sometimes I wonder too, is like, how much does that like play into like my shoulders not recovering and all that stuff? Yeah. It's like my body, macaroni, cheese, and fucking ramen noodles. It's like, obviously my heal the way I want to do, especially training all day, you know? And it was like, I don't know. I actually read it. It was actually like a study, and it was talking about Anthony Pettis getting hurt all the time, and them coming from like a poor upbringing, and just like what they ate and all that stuff, playing a process into probably how many injuries he's had and all this stuff. And it kind of made me like curious on myself. I'm like, damn, I'm not eating healthy or any of that stuff, and it's like I'm constantly injured. You know, I was dealing with so much bullshit, and it was like, yeah, of course my body's not recovering. I'm not eating any vitamins at all. Like, of course I'm not going to recover from that, you know?
No, well, I'm glad you're no longer eating boxed macaroni and cheese, or at least just once in a while.
No, I don't eat, or not even ramen noodles anymore. I could make you some gourmet ramen noodles off a 50-cent package. Like, I could, yeah, I could have cooked that, and people would think that was a gourmet meal because I'm so good at that. Like, that was my meal, and like, I could cook it a million ways. I could open up
was that like your pickup, like, girl, I can make you some noodles?
I was doing that like first cook for girls or whatever. I would like, yeah, I got some noodles and like chicken or whatever, so they come over, I would have like a little bit of ramen noodles, chicken, just wouldn't say shit, you know.
what was their reaction though? Did they like it?
Oh yeah, I cooked ramen. It was so good. Like, you know, it was like prisoners could cook ramen. It was good. People in the jailhouse, and then me, I was probably the second best ramen noodle on improvising shit. I'd put egg ramen noodles. I've thrown peppers, a bunch of stuff. Yeah, I had some gourmet stuff. I was practically at my place.
Oh Lord. All right, so lastly, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your fight coming up. You know, you're fighting Askar Askarov, which you said is one of the most boring fighters in the division, and unfortunately you're fighting him with no crowd this time again.
Yeah,
so does that make it difficult?
I don't really care. Like, to me, it's like, in my head, I'm so much more dangerous than him. And like, in my head, I'm so much more violent. And like the repercussions of me winning the fight and him winning the fight are two different things, you know? And it's like, this is I don't like the matchup. I don't like matchups of like three rounds of like, of a guy that's just hoping to win a round, you know, and hoping to win points. And like, in that, like, there was a moment where I thought we were going to steal the main event. And I was like, in a 5-round fight, like, I'm going to find a kill for sure. In a 5-round fight, I'll find a kill in this guy for sure. But in 3 rounds, it's like, he might be able to hold me down for 2 rounds and a lot of stuff. It's like, I don't really, like, if I'm nervous about this fight, this guy should be shitting bricks, because it's like, I'm gonna try to put a knee across, cutting, be doing everything I can to put him out of there, and it's like, he's just gonna look to get by, you know. And in my head, it's just like, yeah, I'm a real fighter and I do real fighting stuff, and this guy's just looking to win rounds and win points and stuff. And it's like, I've never really been a huge fan of the matchup, but it's like, I'm not afraid of this guy at all. It's like, I don't think he possesses any deadly skills at all. And I think that's what, like, one, motivates me too. And it's just like, you know, if I have anxiety about this fight and all that stuff, it's like, I can't imagine what he's feeling. Cause it's like, I'm going to try to put a shin across his face and I'm going to try to choke and break his arm, all the above, you know? And it's like, I think we have two different mindsets leading into this fight. And it's like, I'm a fighter. This guy's a competitor, you know, like he didn't know what to do after his wrestling. He didn't know what to do after his wrestling career. So he's like, all right, I'll go to the UFC and try to hold people down. And it's like, I was fucking doing this shit when I was a little kid, punching people, trying to hurt people when I was younger, you know? And it's like, this is who I am. This is my happy place. I thrive in chaos. I thrive in brawls. I thrive in all this stuff. And it's like, I am like, I'm not an athlete. I'm a fucking fighter. You know what I'm saying? This guy's a bit athletic and a competitor and all that stuff. But it's like, that's not the sport, you know, or like, that's not like, you know, like he's looking at it, the sport aspect, and I'm looking at it like, you know, I'm a killer. I'm a fighter. And that's who I am. And, you know, like I said, I'm not stressing it. I just want to go out there and get a job done and go finish him and make a statement so I can go be in talks for the next title shot.
Yeah. So you'd want to fight next Brandon Moreno, which now has said that he wants to fight Figueiredo. So is that frustrating, being in a division where the champion and the, you know, like the contender keep fighting each other, especially after, you know, you were in a dominant position over him in that first round before your shoulder popped?
It's super frustrating for me. I couldn't imagine how Pantoja feels, but super frustrating for me because it's like, I don't think either one of these guys are the best in the division. I don't think either one of those two are the best in the division. So it's like, why are we watching these fight for a fourth time? But it's like, it's also in the position where I know from like from hearing around and stuff, it's like, I don't think Figgy wants that fight either. So it's like, that fight should have already been announced in December or whatever it is. They should have already announced when they're fighting, but it's like, Figgy's holding up the division. So it's just, there's a lot of frustrating things going on, but it's like, whatever my path is, I believe it'll lead to the ultimate thing. Like, and I also just think that's like what makes me a fighter, these little setbacks and just like all this bullshit that I have to go through left and right, the surgery, all that stuff. It's like, I'm still here and I'm still fighting. I'm still training. I love the martial arts sport of it. I love the martial art aspect of it. And it's like, a fighter is how you overcome adversity. And that's how I feel like I've always done the best, is I overcome shit left and right. You know, it's like, I've never been the kid that's been good at anything right off the bat. It's like, I've always had to fight through that shit, learn the skill and all that stuff, and just put my heart into it. And that's who I am. And that's what made me. And that's why I'm here today, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and now whenever you do go for the title, it'll be a better version of you, one that's healed, you know, that's not having to worry about having a shoulder pop out mid-fight.
Yeah, and it's like those three big fights that I had right off the bat against like Moreno and all that stuff, is like, I was working a job when I was fighting Kai Kara France, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't grappling, I was doing all the above. And it's like, this guy's fighting for the belt, and it's like, I get it. I get, like, you know, he's more popular than me and all that stuff, but it's like, I was working and I schooled that kid in his best aspect, you know? And it's like, I know where my skill set is, and I believe in myself, and I know, like, now that I'm doing everything properly and I'm in the UFC and I'm making money in the UFC and I can afford to not work a full-time job and do this to the fullest, that it's like, I don't think any of these guys can hang with me at this point.
Yeah, because he used to work in a juvenile detention right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the greatest job ever.
So how was it when you left? Were the kids like kind of sad? I bet they looked up to you.
I think I always think that too, is like, you know, I come from like an area where a lot of these kids came from too, so it was like, we already had like a little bit of a bond compared to some of the staff. Like, a lot of staff are like, we're really educated, and like, you know, they, I don't think they knew how to relate to the kids, whereas like, you know, I open banter and I could like, I wouldn't suggest like staff cussing with the kids or stuff or whatever, but I'm like, crazy. Like, why you think that? Like, you know, like I could have like that bond with them. Cause it was like, you know, like I think I related to a lot of them a lot more, but I also think it was just super important because those kids saw me sacrifice a lot, you know, like I would work the days with them. And then I had to switch to overnights because our training schedule switched, you know? So I had to work overnights, and I would go in overnights, and they would see me walk in, like, because it would be like 8 a.m. So or 8 p.m. So it was like, it wasn't really like it was overnights, but they, like, I would still interact with them, you know, and they would see me, they're like, bro, you look like shit. Did you sleep today? I'm like, sleep. And like, I had to go to practice. I had two practices today. So it's like, I couldn't really sleep. Like, they're like, how are you going to make it through the night? I'm like, I don't know. They're like, well, you know, like, do you fight? Like, when do you fight? And all that. I'm like, I fight in a month. And they're like, well, hopefully you get somewhere after that. So it was like, one day I was in there consistently, and then the next week I was gone completely, because they called me up for my UFC debut, and it was like, I think they, like, I didn't tell them anything, but like, when I came back, they all knew I got signed to UFC, and I won my fight, and I got the bonus and all that stuff. And I think that was like a super important moment for, you know, it was really important for me, but I thought it was really cool for them to see that too, because it was like, they saw the sacrifice I made. They saw me be with them today. Then they saw I had to go to overnights for a year or so. And then they were like, damn, this guy looks like shit. He's not sleeping, you know? And like, and I was like, life wasn't good at that time. You know, life was not good. Like right before the rainbow came out, like, I was dealing with the storms for sure. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, I think it was super important for them to see. And I think it was important for, you know, for all of us. And yeah, so I don't know. I love that job. And I wish some of the conversations and the meaningful moments that I had that I carry in my heart stuck with some of these kids. Cause it's like, you know, like I worked in a juvie that was like, I didn't work in like a juvie where you get in trouble for truancy. I was working in juvie where these guys are in there for attempted murder. You know, they're in there for some crazy shit, that they're in there for some not, like, you know, and like, you realize real quickly when you're around that is like, some of these kids are just not given a fair shake, man. And there's so much fucking potential in that little place. So much potential. And just, you see so much potential in some of these kids that it was like, man, I wish you guys, like, if they were born in a different household or a different set of parents or whatever it was, man, like, their life could have been so much different. But it was like, of course, like, so a lot of, like, it happened pretty much before every one of these fights. It's like right before one of the fights, it's like one of my kids passes away or like gets shot or like, you know, or whatever the case is, or goes back to jail for like a huge crime. But it's just like, you know, like the recidivism rate at the juvie was not good, you know? And I don't know. It's just like, it's weird because you see so much potential in some of these kids, and it's like, these kids fucking could be great. And it's like, but just like, nobody gives a shit, man. Nobody cared to change in America. Like, or like, at least in the inner cities, it's like these kids aren't given, some of these kids aren't given a fair shot. And it's just so horrible to see, you know, they're in gangs, and it's like, how'd you get in a gang, bro? You're like 13 years old. It's like, oh, my brother put me in the gang, or like my dad put me in the gang, my mom put me in the gang, whatever it is. You know, one of our kids had it up, 13 years old, 14 years old, has tattoos all over him. I'm like, who the fuck tattoo artists would tattoo you up? That's what I was telling. I was like, what tattoo artist would tat you up? You're so small, you know, like who consciously could do that? He's like, oh, my mom did it. Or my dad, he said, my dad did it. And I was so taken back. And I was like, damn, like this kid's, you know, as much as like beautiful insight and all these meaningful conversations that you give to them, is they're going to get out and go to home to that, you know, go to home where their parents are gangbanging, their parents are selling drugs, doing drugs, whatever it is, you know, and that's the environment that they're raised in, and that's the life that they're given. And it's just, I don't know. It was super sad to see. And then you see a little bit of the success rate too, and you live off that, man. Like the couple of kids that are still doing so good, it's like, oh, I keep in touch with them, I'm so proud of them and all that stuff. But it's like, but if you want to be honest, the vast majority aren't, you know, the vast majority went right back to the life that they're already living, and it just sucks.
No, it's hard when you only have so much of a percentage to guide somebody, and then the rest is just, you know, it'll drown out however much you help them. But I'm pretty sure you have helped, you know, your quite fair share, and those conversations that have stuck in their mind. Have you ever gone back to visit them?
Yeah, so I go back and I work with the, like, I've worked with like the Dream Center and stuff. So not necessarily like to the facility I was at, because right after I left, COVID happened and it kind of shut down. So most of the kids that are in there, like, I don't know, and I don't have this relationship, but sorry, it's getting loud. I don't have that relationship with, but like, I've tried to build a relationship throughout the community and stuff, because it's like, you know, the UFC career is like so short, you know, and it's like, I don't really know what I want to do afterwards, but I know that I love that job and I love the opportunity to work with those kids. And it's like anything I can do to kind of go back to that will be ideal in the future. And that's kind of like my long-term goal, is just, you know, like make as big of a name as I can in the UFC and do what I can for here, and then just go back to what I was doing before. And it's like, I love that life, you know. It's like, I mean, I wasn't sleeping at the time, but like now that I'm sleeping and like I don't have to be like fighting the UFC and stuff anymore, it'd be a, I think it'd be a big advantage, you know, to go back and be like, hey, I made my dream come true, or whatever it is, and this is how you can do it, you know, or just accomplish it, you know. And it's like, that's so important to see, you know, like that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad they have you around as well, because that I feel like that kind of lacks sometimes. You don't have anybody to look to be an example. Like, I came from here as well, and you can see what I did because I put a lot of time and dedication. When everything you see around you is just sort of like failures and things, you just, I don't know, it kind of makes me sad that some people, that's their reality, and the only difference was that they were born in this place or in that house, and so much goodness in them.
Yeah. And that was exactly it. It's just like, I always like tell a story of that kid, the tatted up kid, because I worked overnights, and I wasn't allowed to bring him out of their room, really. Like I couldn't keep him out of their room for long. You know, they have to go to the restroom. Like, if they're overnights, they have to go to the restroom and go back home or go back into their room. But this kid's tatted up in there for attempted murder on 3 people, you know, and like that's a lot. And that's a lot too. He's in there for a long time, or he was in there for a long time. I don't know if he's out yet, but I remember he's 15 years old at this time, 14 years old, and his stomach was hurting or whatever. Like, he had a stomach ache, and it was like, I brought him out to the couch, and like, which I wasn't supposed to be doing. I wasn't supposed to be giving him my own food or anything, but it was like, I made him some tea, got him like, I sat him on the couch and we're talking. And it was just like, you know, this kid just needs a fucking mom, you know, he needs someone to fucking hug him, you know, and like, that's what, and you're in the juvie lifestyle. It's like, you can't be soft there. Like, you really can't. Like, even like from a staff's perception, like, or like perspective, is like, if those kids saw the way he was with me that day, he would have got roasted, you know. It would have been a bad day for him, you know. They'd been like, you're so soft, and like, they would have talked shit to him. But it was like, I don't know, like those few moments that you can interact, or like you could just see like you know, like I saw it for what it was, you know. I, like, some of these staff members weren't like, it was a privilege to not see how it was, you know. Like, some of these staff members like, well, this kid's an attempt to murder, he belongs here and all that stuff. But it's like, this kid's also 13 years old and grew up in a fucked up household. And it's like, and it's also like, this kid's 13 years old and his stomach's hurting. He just needs someone to fucking care about him one day, you know? And it's like, that's what that place was like. Maybe wasn't missing throughout the whole thing, but it was just like, a little sympathy goes a long way in that job, man. And it was like, if you could relate to him and just fucking put what they did aside, you know? And it was like, some of these kids did horrible things too. And it's like, but it's like, like, what would I have done if I was born in his house? Would I have done the same shit? I guarantee I would have, because it's like, you know, I'm a product of my environment. That's the reason I'm fighting, is because my brother fucking instilled it in me when it was like that was my choices in life. And it was like, I don't know, it was like just like a little bit of empathy and stuff. But it was crazy though. It was, what I'm saying is just like, there was like these moments where it's just like, damn, this is just a little kid, you know. This is a little kid. And he's trapped, you know, and it's like, he's trapped in this lifestyle. He's trapped in juvie. He's trapped in this certain mind state, and he's trapped fucking not being a little kid, you know? And it's like, when you see a normal 13-year-old, 12-year-old kid, like, you know, they're fucking so full of life and hope and all this stuff, but this kid's already just defeated, you know? And it sucked. It sucked to see. And it was just like those little moments that you'd have in there, which are few and far between, because these kids are hard to open up with, you know. They don't want to open up to you, and it's like, I get that, and I get it completely. So why would they want to open up to me? It's like, I'm a fucking, my job essentially as like at the juvie, like, I was never really big on it, because I, you know, I was pretty sympathetic the whole time, but like, my job essentially was to get him in trouble, like, you know what I'm saying? And that's what they saw me as. Like, it's like, and like, I was able to like separate it, and you know, I would only get them in trouble if they were doing some dumb shit, like if they were beating each other up or beating up one kid. Like, that's the only time I'd ever like enforce a lot of rules. But it was like, I wasn't enforcing these dumb rules that, like, I don't know, like I said, they're fucking little kids, you know, they're little kids. And it was like, I don't know, just had so much sympathy and just so much, I don't know, it just like, you can't help but like love some of these kids, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like, for a minute. Yeah, it's just, there's so many beautiful moments and like so many funny moments and like, I don't know, just real life moments. And it's like, if you weren't being real and you weren't being a human right there, like, you're going to miss it, you know? And it was just like, I couldn't be any more thankful for a job like that and the opportunity that they they allowed me to be working with these kids and all that stuff.
Yeah. Do you feel like you take that with you when you go fight?
Yeah, for sure. I take a lot of that stuff with me, man. I take it on a daily basis, you know. I take it on how I act with people. It's like, I live in Denver, and like, I live in a weird neighborhood right now where there's like a lot of craziness going on. And it's easy to be like, yo, this motherfucker is living this way, he needs to straighten it out. But it's like, also, it's just like, damn, what happened, bro? Like, what happened, you know? Like, and that's really like a huge thing that goes on in my head a lot now, is just like, what happened to you, you know? Like, fuck, man. Like, and that was something big I could take away from that juvie. It's just like, it wasn't like I could be judgmental on these kids. It was just like, damn, like, this is a real situation. This is a real problem going on in Colorado, or like in Denver at least. And it was just like, there's real issues going on, and nobody, if you're not dealing with it directly, you don't give a shit. And if you're dealing with it directly, you don't know how to get out of it, really, you know? And it's like, I don't know, there's nothing you can really do about it right now, you know?
How did you feel like you started to bond with them? Because if they saw you as this sort of like outside bad guy, how did you kind of break that?
Yeah, so I knew a kid in a different, so there was a bunch of things that happened, but like I knew a kid in like a different juvie, and like I knew him from like just other areas of life or whatever. And he was starting to tell people, he's like, yeah, my brother works at this juvie or whatever. So it kind of went in where it was like a little bit of an issue where I'm like, bro, you cannot be telling people like that we're related, or like, you know, that we know each other, because it was like causing a little bit of conflict too. But it was also just like, it allowed people to open up. They're like, oh, well, do you go to this restaurant? Or like, you know, do you go here? And then it was just like, you know, a couple of kids, and like, they probably still don't know this, but like, I knew their parents. I knew their mom. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I worked with one of their dude's moms before I came here. And it was like, I couldn't say it to him, but it's like, I had access to the internet. So it's like, I knew his name. I knew his kid. I knew his mom and all that stuff. So it's like, you know, it was just like, there was moments where I was like, you know, like Denver's not that big of a place. And it was like, I knew some of them deeply, or like, I knew like them separately or whatever from a separate place. And it was like that. And then fighting, when they found out I was a fighter, that was a huge deal too, because like all of them want to be fighters, you know, like every single one of them wanted to fight, or they were fighting. So if they wanted to be a fighter, didn't want to be a fighter, fighting was a part of their life for sure. So when they found out I was a fighter, that was a huge deal too, because it changed the dynamic of like, cause I'll go in there fairly soft, you know, like I wasn't going in there like, cause you were like, I was allowed to restrain some of these kids. Like if they're doing something crazy, I'm allowed to restrain them, but I would never do. I was really good at like making people laugh and stuff, and like making people like, you know, make cracking a joke in like a serious moment and kind of easing the tension. And I think when they realized like, oh, this guy's not trying to fuck us up, you know, like, cause there were staff in there that, like, that would, you know, use that moment to take out somebody, you know. And it was like, I was never that person, you know. I fight all day, every day. Why would I try to fight at work, you know? Like, I was using diplomacy pretty well. And I think just moments like that, and it was just, and then years of just being around them too. It was like, some of those kids were serving years, and I worked at that juvie for 3 years, so it was like we spent a lot of time around each other. And it was like, I was a consistent person, and you know, like, and like I think that's what all of them needed. It's a little bit of consistency on being like a nice, fair person too. It's just like really what it is. It's like some of these people don't have like, some of them didn't have anything consistent, but it's like a relationship, an adult relationship that was consistent, where I was actually looking out for them, and you know, vice versa. And there's so many good people that I work with that were doing the same, but it was just like, I think they needed that, you know. And especially like being in an all male juvie facility, and then being Mexican too, where they're like half the population was Mexican, you know, or minorities in some sort. So it's just like, I started off fairly well, but that being said, it's just throughout the years, I was able to create a lot of bonds, you know.
Did they have any therapy there?
Yeah, like they do.
Therapists that they see that can help them through stuff.
Yeah, they had therapists. A lot of them, like I said, a lot of them don't open up though, you know what I'm saying? Like that they had therapists, but none of them were really opening up to them either, you know, because it's just like, yo, what are you gonna do, talk about my feelings to this girl, guy, whatever it is?
Yeah.
So they did, and they would have it like once a week. Every single one of them would have it like once a week, where they meet with the therapist. And I think it helped. Like, I think it did help a lot. But you know, like sometimes like the real trouble kids aren't going to open up to you, you know. They're not going to open up to those guys like that. They see it's like a police figure almost, you know.
Yeah, they almost need kind of like a big brother figure that can help them through things.
And that's how I always felt. It was just like, you know, I was like a older brother that kind of kept things in order and just kind of see, like, you know. And that's always how I felt about the whole thing, you know.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you before I let you go, because I think I've had you on for like an hour. I'm sorry. No. I didn't even ask before we started, like how much time you have. So what's the stage now, from now to till you fight in October, October 15th against Askarov? What's left for you now?
What's left is I just want to keep working on my jujitsu, my wrestling. I've been doing a lot of wrestling for this camp, like anti-wrestling. But for me, it is like, have you ever heard of Prefontaine? You know what Prefontaine is?
No.
Prefontaine's an American racer. And Prefontaine is, he's an American racer. And he was known for being like, he would do these long races. And he would start off just running. Like he would start off sprinting. And he's like, you know what? He goes, my goal is just push myself as hard as I can and see if these motherfuckers can keep up with me. And he goes, if they can keep up with me, I know that I push myself from start to finish and I gave it my all. And to me, that's, it resonates with me so much, because I carry a high pace, but it's like, I want to put a Prefontaine pace on this kid. It's just, you know what, if you want to go and try to grapple me, then I'm going to throw a million submissions at you. I'm going to try to get up every second. I'm throwing elbows, knees, all the above at you the whole entire time from start to finish. And I'm putting that pace on you and being dangerous. And it's like, if you can keep up with that and you can survive that, and all you're looking to do is survive and not take me out, then it's like, okay, whatever, you deserve to win. But it's like, in my head, it's like, you know, you're going to, this is the best quote for Prefontaine too. He's the best pace is a suicide pace. And today's a good day to die. And that's how I feel about it too. It's just, yeah. I'm going to go out there and fucking gas myself out first, second, third round, and put a high pace on this cat. And you know what, if I take myself out in the process, I don't give a shit. I know that I gave everything I had in there, you know, and that's all I want to do is just, you know, give everything I have, leave a little bit of piece of me in that cage and, you know, hopefully take this dude out early on.
You just got me so hyped for that. I'm going to repeat that quote
for like, forever. Yeah, yeah. Look up some posts, man. He was awesome. He was a different kind of racer. He was a racer that reminded me of a fighter, like where it was like all like mental, where he's like, you know what, like I'm gonna go out there, and if the guy wants to keep up behind me, then he's gonna have to fucking hurt himself, you know. He's gonna have to push himself beyond limits, you know. And that's what I've been trying to do this whole entire camp, is just embrace the hurt, you know, embrace the suckiness of all this shit, because it sucks, man. Fighting sucks, training sucks, all of it sucks. It really does. Especially like, I work hard, you know. And it's like, if you work as hard as me, or you work that hard, your day's gonna suck. But it's like, if I know if I'm hurting, my fucking opponent's hurting, my training partner's hurting, you know. And it's like, I'm willing to burn myself to burn him. And I believe that to the fullest. I believe I could handle the fire better than him. I could handle the flame better than him. And it's like, I'm willing to walk into it deeper than he is. Let's see who comes out burned, you know?
You got me so hyped for it. I mean, this shit should be the main event. I'm like pissed out.
Yeah, I've been thinking that too. But it's like, I just need to make these statements, you know? Because it's like, they're telling me that I'm not the main event because I don't have enough Instagram followers. I don't have enough following. But it's just like, one, it's like, I don't think I'll ever have as much a following as Alexa Grasso. I don't think I'll ever have that much of a following. But that being said, it's just like, I want to be undeniable now, because it's like, I've been in a few spots where it's like, I'm on the prelims or I'm on that. And it's like, I've been fighting number three, number four in the rules. And it's like, I want respect on my name, you know? And it's like, I want to earn that. If they don't think I've earned it, then it's like, I'm going to take it, you know? And that's the only option. It's just like, you know, they don't want to give me that spot. I'm going to give them no fucking option to just go out there. Cause it's like, they can say all they want is like, I don't have enough following. But it's like, you can't say I'm a boring fighter. You can't say I'm a boring fighter. You can't, I don't put my balls out there, like balls to the wall out there. And it's like, I'm everything Dana White's ever for a top ultimate fighter or whatever the hell it is. You don't leave it up to the judges, be a fighter. Don't try to win a decision. It's like, I don't do any of that shit. Like I finish almost every fight I've ever been in. And it's like, I've never not just gave it my fullest. And it's like, if that's not speaking for itself, then it's like, I have to find a way to make it speak for itself. And it's like, finishing a boring ass wrestler like this, I think will put me in a good position to either campaign for a title shot or at least a main event slot for my next fight.
Yeah. Do you think it's because of the no crowd?
I don't really know. I really have no clue why the hell it is the way it is, you know, but it's like,
I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I see a bunch of like unranked heavyweight fighters, which was like, I like heavyweights, sure, a little bit, but it's like the least skilled division there is. And it's like, I'm watching these dudes go out there and fight unranked or whatever in main event spots, or like not main events, but like co-main events and all that shit. And it's like, I'm over here fighting Pantoja and who's number two in the world, and Brandon Moreno, number two in the world on the prelims. And it's like, yeah, I just want to get that respect on my name, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, I hope you the best of luck for your upcoming fight, and you know, people better watch out. Fucking put respect on it.
I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And shout out to my sponsors too. EAP Glass, man, they're the reason why I'm staying afloat out here in Colorado. So I appreciate them to the fullest. And thank you for your time again.
Oh, of course. You also have that Draper. What do you call it?
Oh, Dr. Dabber. That I'm sponsored by Dr. Dabber. Dr. Dabber and Prevail right here. So I'm sponsored by a lot of things, but EAP Glass, man, they're my fucking, they're the reason why I'm staying afloat. They're the reason why I could have got surgery and not have to worry about working a full-time job and stuff at that time. So they kept me afloat this whole entire time. I couldn't appreciate them anymore.
Oh man, that's awesome. I'm glad you have sponsors and stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. All right, cool. All right, have a good day.
All right. I'll talk. You too.